Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another hour of Tribal Wisdom. I am your host, Cynthia Williamston. Happy Wedding Wednesday to you. Happy wedding to all of the new couples that just recently married. And, of course, happy anniversary to all of those who are celebrating. We are so glad to have you back for another hour or so on a Wednesday, where this month we are celebrating men of leadership. And so we're spending the entire month defining, talking about, celebrating, and honoring what leadership is, the changes that it makes to one's life, and all of those who actually practice leadership in order to help someone change their life. Tonight, we are so honored to have with us the co-founder of the OSIRIS organization and the author of Manhood from the Hood, Bill Roddy. We are just over the the hills excited because he's got so much to say. He's doing so much in his community. And when I read his book, I was thoroughly touched by his memoir of his experiences and how he grew up and what all those experiences did for him to make him a man. So I want to share that and this interview with you. And if you have any questions, please feel free to give us a call, 347-996-3160. But give us about 20 or 30 minutes to get into the show, and then please let us know if you have any questions. Press 1 to let me know that you'd like to speak. Otherwise, we're happy that you're listening in. Hi, Bill. Are you there?
I'm here.
Wonderful, wonderful. Welcome to Tribal Wisdom.
I'm honored to be here.
Yes. Why don't you introduce yourself, even though I've introduced you a bit, but tell us who you are, what you do, and where you're from.
Okay. I'm Bill Roddy, and what I do is, you know, I've been fortunate to be able to say that I really have found my life's purpose and the reason why I'm here. My wife and I started an organization back in 1997 as a result of volunteering, and we formed our nonprofit called OSIRIS Organization. And what that does is provide life skill training, mentoring, aka values, to youth and young adults. We provide technology training, technology employment. And we also have an entrepreneurial division where we teach young people how to start their own businesses. And we also have a post-secondary scholarship component as well. So that's what I do. But where I'm from is I grew up on the west side of Chicago, right smack dab in the inner city. and I eventually ended up in Minnesota. and that's a story in itself.
Well, I can't wait. I know you touch on that a little bit in your memoir, and I can't wait for us to touch on that tonight on the show. But first, I want to jump right into our topic this month, which is leadership.
Okay.
And your opinion, of course, and your journey is so important to this topic because of what you do. And we had a brief conversation about leadership ourselves, and we talked about the elements of leadership. What are some of the elements of leadership to you?
Well, for me, the main element that comes to my mind, and this has been based upon my experiences and feedback I get from the people that I serve and the people that have remained in my life over a long period of time. The biggest element that comes to my mind is that of being a servant. Being a service, servant, if I can use the term servant leadership, stands out to my mind as being probably one of the biggest elements of a true leadership. Because I think being in a leadership position is to bring out the best in those that you lead or those that look up to you, those that see you as a positive figure in their lives or as someone who is being mentored by them. It's your ability to understand that you occupy a very powerful position, and that position is to do good for others. It is to uplift them and to help them see the beauty and power that they have within themselves so that they can themselves become leaders and go out and do good in the world as well. And I think another positive aspect of a good leader is understanding the importance of delegating communication. And also wrapped around communication, I think, understanding the true art of being able to listen and understand how powerful your words can be as you communicate with people. And I'm very, very careful about each and every word I choose to use when I'm in the presence of somebody who look up to me as being a quote-unquote leader.
Wonderful, wonderful. Go on.
So those are just some of the attributes that I have experienced myself, and you know there's quite a bit more. But these are some of the values that I incorporate in my life, and this is how I live my life. So I just try to be an example to the young people that are in my lives, and being a true leader. Learning takes place on both sides. The leader learns as well as those that you're leading, and the ones that you lead are also our teachers for you as well. And mm-hmm. So I like being in a quote unquote leadership position because it's a very learning position to be in, and there's never a as you call it a dull moment. I am always learning being in these positions. I'm always learning, and that's what I thoroughly enjoy doing is learning, because the more I learn, the more I grow, which allows me to become a better friend to those I lead. It allows me to become a better friend to my spouse. It allows me to become a better husband, a better business person, and it just allows me to become a better person, which is the ultimate goal, I think, of most of us, is to learn and grow and evolve and become better.
Yes, yes. And because you said that being in a position of leadership allows there to be learning on both sides.
Yes.
What is your opinion on how current leadership affects future leadership?
Well, our current leadership, that's a great question. I perceive our current leadership, and I think it all depends on what platforms you look at leadership. Do you look at leadership from community-based? Do you look at it from political? Do you look at it from your business or corporation? Do you look at it from politics or your church? I mean, it all depends on, I think, what foundation of leadership you're looking towards and what of those platforms that you feel that is heavily influencing your lives. And so I also say that current leadership, here's how my thoughts on it are, is I look at the conditions of people that I'm in contact with, and I ask myself currently, are these people becoming better as a result of my relationship with them? Are they growing? Are they learning? Do they feel good about being around me? When they leave, do they feel uplifted? That's the question I constantly ask myself currently about current leadership. And then if I can say honestly that they are becoming better as a result of our relationship, then the future leadership within those people would take care of themselves because they themselves would become future leaders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's
true.
Just how I see it. Yeah, that's just my take on that.
No, it's very important because we discussed the power of influence at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just knowing that future leadership watches us so closely mm-hmm. with how we handle ourselves in our personal, professional, and community lives, which is the platform
exactly.
that we really want to discuss when it comes to leadership. So your points are valid, absolutely valid. And if we're speaking from the platforms of our personal, professional, and community life, you also touched on the fact that you constantly learning to become a leader or in leadership helps you to be a better friend, a better husband, and a better businessman. So you actually touched on each platform without me even asking.
which is great,
because I think it's very important for people to hear that leadership qualities affect each and every one of those in order to create a safe space for people to be in.
Yes, I totally agree with you on that. I totally agree, because when you do create a safe space for people to be in, of course, people open up. It's part of some of the attributes of being a good communicator. You have mm-hmm. to create a safe space for people to be able to open up and to trust and to share with you their thoughts. And I think that one aspect of that comes about being able to understand the power, being able to learn how to ask questions, and then the ability to truly listen to what the person has to say. Mm-hmm. Because throughout my time as starting Osiris and really working with kids, is that one of the things that people are really hurting for is to be able to have someone that they feel that truly listen to them. And I have been just overwhelmed with the amount of adults who feel the same way. It's like nobody is listening to me.
Right.
And I get that from both youth and also from both adults. It's like they don't feel like nobody really has taken the interest in really truly listening to them. And for
how
me, I found that as a human characteristic being kind of surprising, but yet still I wasn't surprised as a result of the questions and the uncertainties that people have in their lives. I've learned over a period of time that that's not surprising whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And along with what you're saying, along with being able to listen, what are the effects of all of those elements that you spoke on in correlation with credibility when it comes to being a good leader?
Well, I think when leaders incorporate some of these attributes, I think it increases the being credible tremendously, because it instills trust, and you're more accountable, and people will just completely open up with you. Here's an example. When I was going through my transition, when I had left my corporate positions, and Gail and I were kind of working temp jobs and doing some consulting on the side, and people thought we had lost our minds, leaving these corporate jobs and making all this money and blah blah blah. They thought I had just, they wanted to put me in a psych ward. but it was during that time, that I developed a lot of insight into a lot of people's behavior and their own fears. They looked successful on the outside. They had all of the stuff. They had the homes. They had the cars. They had, the kids in private schools. And this is when I moved to a fairly well-to-do area. And a lot of guys confided in me because, I started playing basketball with them. I was playing tennis. And so I had a chance to get to develop a relationship with them. And then afterwards, they looked at me as a real big question mark. Now, here's this intelligent guy, threw away his career, working in a warehouse part-time and doing consulting work. Why is he doing this? And so as I shared with them why I did it, oh, they opened up. It was like Niagara Falls.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, and then I became the go-to guy to share their concerns, their questions, their fears, their feelings of being discontent, the pressures that they felt as being men. Now, here I am around all of these successful guys, these CEOs, these owners of business, but yet still I was the guy who they would come to when they needed to have someone to talk to about their own concerns, their own issues. So I became someone that was credible and that would respect their privacy, and I never shared my conversations with anybody. And so for some reason that got passed around the club I was blown to, and so I was the guy who was like the resident therapist.
Yes. Yes.
And I wasn't getting paid for it. I wasn't getting paid for it.
You know what? I think that a lot of times people who follow their calling rarely do.
Yeah.
And part of your credibility to them is the fact that you literally stepped out of something that I guess the average person would want, you know, the dream life, as you say, and then went after your calling instead of settling for the money, the, you know, comfy position and all of those things. So I think that since they were able, it was probably something that they wanted to do, and you were brave enough to step out and do it because I admire people like that myself.
and some of them said that too. They said, man, I wish I could do what you do, but I have too many obligations. I got kids in private school. I got the house. I got this job. I'm traveling. My kids are on traveling this team, that team. You know, my wife's in this club. We belong to this club. They felt that they were at times trapped and that they couldn't do what I did. But, I never really judged them. I never really told them what to do. I mainly listened and just shared with them how I went about doing what I did and why. And so that's one thing that I have always kind of, you know, felt good about. And to be honest with you, most of these guys I am still very good friends with to this day.
Great.
Still great friends.
Mm-hmm. Now, my next question is about, does leadership end? Because we've just recently, I can't say lost, but a bunch of our powerhouse individuals have passed on to, you know, another life that have passed on, and they still affect us. Their quotes are still here. Their actions are still here. The films, everything that they have kind of left with us still influence us greatly. So what is your opinion on, does leadership end?
No, I really don't think leadership ends. I really don't. Because I think when I think universal truths are shared with the world and with the community and with individuals, I think the leadership remains in the hearts and the souls of the ones who are ready to make that leap and to move forward. It becomes a part of who you are. For example, I'll give my family as a perfect example. I learned leadership from my family. I first learned it from my grandfather. I observed his leadership skills. What I learned from him was, if I can use one word, and there's many, but the first word come to my mind is becoming self-reliant. I learned from my grandmother kindness, acknowledging kindness and being kind to people. From my Aunt Ida, who was one of my aunts who really encouraged me to read. As you read my book, you know how influential she was in my life.
Yes, yes.
I can read a whole show on Aunt
Ida. Well, in the next half hour, we will be talking about all of the family members that you wrote about in your book. So don't worry. We're going to get to them.
Okay. But I'm just using one word as a leadership quality that has permeated my entire life. Aunt Ida, she was the epitome of discipline. Mm-hmm. My Aunt Betty, her leadership skills taught me how to question things. And my loving Aunt Sam, she exuded and taught me what it felt like to be around someone who exuded unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends like Ernest Leakes, who I call Brother Earn, and Melvin Frey, and my coaches, they were the epitome of loyalty outside of my family. And so all of those leadership qualities became a part of who I am that continue to inspire me today. And so our past leaders left, they left inspirational words, deeds, how they carried themselves, examples. Their leadership qualities will always affect the people who are ready to make that a part of their lives. It has to permeate your heart and soul. If not, it's just words that you intellectually process. You have to allow the leadership qualities of those of the past to become a part of who you are. It has to become a part of who you are. If not, it's just words. It's just words. It's just saying. It's just quotes and no actions. True leadership that permeates your whole heart and soul, you're compelled to do something with it, and you're compelled to do something good with it. And so true leadership never dies. It only lives in the people that are ready to take that next step. Does that make
that,
sense to you?
That is just excellence. Just, you know, you are speaking excellence right now.
Oh, well, I'm not sure about excellence now.
No, that was an excellent definition, because you added more elements to the very first question, which was what are elements of leadership, and I mean self-reliance, kindness, discipline, be able to question, unconditional love, and then most importantly, loyalty. Just listening to those things, I'm like, wow, you know, he's really kind of laying it down for anyone who's listening. They have to really examine themselves if they want to be in the position of leadership and figure out whether or not they have these elements, if they're showing these elements, were they able to see examples of these elements through their life growing up as you were shown in order to show it later on. One of the things that I'm paraphrasing, but I know that they said, you know, leaders don't tell people what they do. They show them what to do. They get in the trenches with the people that they're leading and literally lead. So
yeah, I agree.
Everything that you're saying right now, you're saying, no, we have to actually get in there and do it. And another element that you just kind of brought in, which I want to get a deeper answer on, is leadership from the heart. Most people don't think that leaders have a heart, because it seems like they do things so harshly. The decisions that they make are sometimes for the greater good, but it also can hurt some people, or rather challenge people. I won't say hurt, but it can be very challenging to be under powerful leadership, because you have to really trust them and do as they say, whether you want to or not. But can we touch on leadership from the heart? Those types of leaders compel you to really want to follow them and do things. Your opinion on this?
Yeah, and that's a very good statement. And I guess I could, if I could, you know, add, you know, that's something that I would like to even add into my own life in terms of how I could perceive myself as well, is that I lead from my heart and my intuition. And as a male in our society, we're not truly taught to lead from those two components. We're almost taught just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think throughout all of the work I've done in terms of my own introspective work and self-discovery, I've learned that I operate best from those two elements, the heart, being a servant, and using my own intuition. Because what it allows me to do is to be chosen to be in a leader position rather than given or a leadership position. And I think that's very important, because it's a reflection of how people see you. Sometimes when people occupy leadership positions, necessarily don't have leadership skills.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, you see the results of how it makes people feel. Tension, chaos, among the troops, disloyalty, not being a team player. And I've seen this in all of my corporate jobs. I've seen it all. People are put in leadership positions who had no business whatsoever being in those positions because they're not expansive. They don't see the bigger picture, and they don't really know how to treat people. And I see people, everyday people who are in leadership positions who lead from the heart, and everything around them blossoms. And so learning, leading from the heart allows people to feel good about who they are. And people who are in leadership positions who don't have leadership skills, they do just the opposite. They do just as much damage on that end as people who lead from the heart and intuition inspire people from a very positive perspective. I've seen and experienced both sides of it.
I love it. If you're just tuning in, you are listening to Bill Roddy and myself, Cynthia Williamson. We are talking about leadership, leadership qualities, and all of the things, and clearly the outcomes of leadership from the heart or leadership unprepared, or, you know, if you haven't been prepared to lead and you're thrust into the position, you might cause a little chaos, as you said, disloyalty, tension, and a few other things. So if you're listening in, please, please tell someone about this wonderful knowledge that Bill Roddy is sharing with us tonight. And since we're talking about leadership from the heart, why don't we just go right ahead and get into manhood from the hood? We really didn't get deep into the Osiris. You did talk about Osiris organization. We will, you know, I will want you to talk more about that a little later on, so that people will be able to find you. But let's get right into Manhood from the Hood. I thoroughly enjoyed this book. It does pull you in because it's such a wonderful and true story. Let's talk about the characters, and we can't even say the characters. Let's talk about these influencers in your life.
Oh, there were so many of them. They were my village.
Mm-hmm.
And the old saying that it takes a village to raise a child, I am a perfect example of that. And the main characters, as the ones who read the book, is my grandfather and my grandmother. But first of all, I would like to say that I like to add in there my biological mother, Irene Hoskins, who brought me into the world at a very tender age and was kind enough to allow my grandparents to raise me. And so they mean the world to me, and I have always tried to take what they gave me, nurtured me, and provided me with. I've always have tried to take what they gave me and to improve upon it and to make it better, because they didn't have the ability to read and to, quote unquote, get educated like I did. And so I have always and always will remember and appreciate the sacrifices that they made, but not just for me, but for all of us, my aunts, cousins, and everybody that they came into contact with. And they were the epitome of what you call old school values, growing up on a farm in Arkansas, and then moving to Chicago. But they brought the values with them.
Mm-hmm.
they didn't leave them on the farm.
No, thank goodness.
Yeah. So, but those two mean the world to me. And like if when I wrote the book, the first thing I wanted to do was dedicate the book to them, and by saying that I hope that they're proud of the man that I've become, because without them I wouldn't be able to be sitting here on your wonderful show sharing with you these aspects of life. So I want to say the main two characters in my life will always be is my grandparents.
Wonderful. Some of my favorite parts of the book had to do with not just your grandparents, but also your, as you say, your village, being
yeah.
able to point out opportunities for you, even in places where you didn't see them. They were able to recognize opportunity and get you to see it as well.
Yeah, they were very good about that. Very good. And I'll give you an example. I'll talk about my aunts, especially my Aunt Betty, who's no longer with us right now. But my Aunt Betty she's my ultimate counselor. She was my counselor. Aunt Betty and I would stay up late nights, 12, 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. On days that she had to go to work in the morning, when her kids and my little cousins were all sound asleep, she would just stay up late nights and talk to me about values, what my grandparents wanted for us, going to school, being able to understand about relationships and about, especially in high school, you know, when you're a young man coming into, you know, puberty and stuff like this, and she would just say, no, you don't want to be going out, you know, bringing kids in the world. She talked to me about respecting young women at a very, very early age.
Mm-hmm.
And my Aunt Ida, she was, you know, she was a no-nonsense, you know, we're going to get this homework done. I don't care what you got planned. I mean, this is important.
Yes.
She was very influential in my life through my elementary and middle school years because she set in motion my love and my desire to read and to become disciplined when it came to going to school, doing homework. She instilled that in me. And she was no nonsense. Now, her and I bumped heads quite a bit now. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't a wonderful time with Anita.
Well, no nonsense people tend to bump heads quite often with other
people. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When I was young, oh, I thought she was the meanest lady in the world. I said, man, what did I do to deserve her? I want to go outside
and
play
baseball. Blessed.
Yeah, yeah. I want to go outside and play baseball, but I got to read a half hour. You know, and that was my. I had to do it. I didn't have any choice, and it wasn't. I'm going to go to my mother and father and see if I can have them negotiate. No, they were going to tell me the same thing. What did Joe and I tell you? And that's what I had to do. But then on the other hand, when balanced all of it out was my Aunt Sam. My Aunt Sam was the epitome of unconditional love. I could do no wrong in the eyes of my Aunt Sam.
Mm-hmm.
So she was the balancing act between my Aunt Betty, the intellectual counselor, my Aunt Ida, the in-your-face kind of warrior kind of person. She was the balancing act. So when I needed to have a hug, when I needed to have my heart taken care of, I would always go spend time with Aunt Sam. And she knew intuitively when I needed to be around her. She
mm-hmm.
can tell when my heart was heavy, when I was stressed out. She can tell when I had an argument with Aunt Ida. She knew. And she used to always invite me over her house, and I stayed on the weekends and eat and spend time with her kids and watch TV. And I just needed to be around her. And when I was around her, the whole world was safe. And that's what I had. And then my coaches, I mean, my coaches play a major role. And my lifelong friend, Ernest Leakes, who I call Brother Aaron in the book, he and I met when we were in kindergarten in 1962.
Mm-hmm.
And we never, ever lost contact. We became the best friends. And he was the first true friend I ever had outside of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And we still talk today. And again, too, he was the epitome of a loyal friend. He was the epitome of loyalty. If you would, you know, if the Webster's Dictionary ever go through a rewrite, and they should put his picture up on the loyalty. Seriously.
Nice, very
yeah.
nice. Now, speaking of how you transitioned from the farm to Chicago into the relationships with your coaches and moving forward, can you break down how leadership plays a role in the transitioning of different milestones in your life?
Yeah, that's a good question. again, when I first really saw leadership, and I didn't really know what it was because I was just observing my grandfather. I just observed him, and I observed how he handled things. We don't really know to this day truly why he decided to leave Arkansas to come to Chicago. But as I became, you know, a lot older, and especially in 64, 65, 66 and up, and I became a little bit more observant of his qualities of leadership. And that allowed me to be so heavily influenced by him. His leadership qualities permeated my whole sense of my young soul, my young spirit, and it helped me make decisions on what type of friends I was going to choose to be around and who I was going to spend my time with growing up in Chicago. It allowed me to bond and be attracted to certain coaches as a young man. I was always seeking out other people who exuded the qualities of my grandfather and my aunts and even Ernest Leakes and my grandmother. I was always seeking out people that had similar values. And so their leadership qualities, my family leadership qualities, was a platform or a roadmap of others that I was seeking outside of it so that I could unconsciously develop a village to support me. I didn't know what I was doing at the time, but I was so heavily influenced by my family's upbringing that I was seeking that out and not necessarily being so that conscious of it. Did that answer your question?
It did, and it makes a lot of sense because I don't think that everyone is always aware when they're seeking out leadership, when you're trying to seek out that element that you miss from home.
Yeah.
Sometimes you end up not seeking, but in the middle of negative influencers. I don't want to say gangs, but you know there are negative elements in some neighborhoods that people seek or get into in the process of looking for leadership because they're not sure exactly what that looks like. They just know, you know, pieces of it, and they find it in something else. I'm so glad that you talked about how you went to sports and you were looking for someone who was showing you the same elements that your grandfather showed you. So when seeking leadership, if you don't know it or if you do know it, what should young people today really gravitate toward when they're in the process of a transition or a life change when it comes to finding a good mentor or leader to follow?
And that's a great question. And I think, too, that is one of the reasons why we started Osiris.
Mm-hmm.
Is for those very same, that very to answer that very same question that you just asked, because, people understand, too, back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, especially the African-American family structure was a whole lot different than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 60s, growing up, you know, doing the Civil Rights Movement, we had a lot of men in our lives. I mean, all of my friends had their fathers and uncles and grandmothers in their lives and mothers in their lives. We had a family structure. It was there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, there was gangs, too. Now, don't get me wrong. There was gangs in Chicago even during those times.
Right.
But, but you look at our situation now where we have so many families now that are led by, you know, single moms, unfortunately, that a lot of the young men don't have that structure like I had. Mm-hmm. And here's a perfect example. When Gail and I were volunteering, before we started Osiris in 97, from 95 up until 97, we were volunteers. And what was requested of us all the time was to come out as a couple and spend time with them, mm-hmm. cook in the cottages where they lived at, coming to their family visitation days on Saturdays, being a positive male role model in their lives. I was mentoring young men who didn't even know who their fathers were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They had no idea. And so they start seeking out those type of relationships and gangs and all different other type of activities. And they found what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But what they found was leading them down to a road of self-destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And
chaos,
so
like
they
you said.
Chaos, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw me as something different. Mm-hmm. And they were requesting of me and Gail to spend more time with them because they were seeking what I had growing up in Chicago, that family structure. I had that. These young people that we were working with, they didn't have that. And so they were seeking it. Consciously and unconsciously, they were seeking it. And we were someone that they saw as an example.
I like that because it does distinguish what we talked about earlier, which was leadership from the heart and I guess leadership through fear, because I, based on certain movies or some of the things that I've heard when I've spoken with individuals who were involved in gangs, they got involved looking to be or looking to have a family structure, but a lot of things were organized and delegated through fear, where your way of doing things really allows them, like we said earlier, to feel a safe place to talk with you. They want to spend more time with you. It's a different type of leadership that, like you say, there's only two reasons to do things, out of love and out of fear. And out of fear comes selfishness and disloyalty and chaos, and out of love comes self-reliance and all kinds of things that people really want to perpetuate these days. So the level
exactly.
of respect, yes, the level of respect that both you and Gail have from these young men is just truly beautiful, first of all.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes, and I'm so glad that you guys are able to be an example to them, not just of leadership, but leadership as a couple, leadership as a black couple. I think it's really important. It's one of the reasons why I actually started my magazine and started Tribal Wisdom, because there were so many people who have not seen black couples working together. So the fact that you guys put this thing together, you work together, you visit together, it says a lot, and it's truly making an impact.
Well, thank you. We feel that it is too, and so I'm just honored and happy and very fortunate to be able to be doing this with her as well.
Mm-hmm.
And being with her for going on 34 years now,
wonderful.
I don't want to start talking about her, because I think I shared you early. That's a whole nother show.
And you know what? I can't wait for that show.
So I admit I can't start talking about her. I just can't.
Okay. Okay. So then, let's just go ahead and really get into the Osiris organization then.
Okay.
You know what, let me just take this moment to say, if you're listening once again, if you're listening on the internet, we've got about 15 minutes left for the show. Just in case we go over, you want to call in because you will get cut off. So if you choose to call in, the number is 347-996-3160. And, of course, as I said, you press the number 1 if you have a question or a comment for Bill, or please, we're happy to have you just listen. But the Osiris organization, I saw some letters. You're starting a few initiatives. You're starting to put the books into schools. There's a few things that you have going on. Please, please, please tell us about that.
Well, I'll start with the book first. One of the most exciting things that I'm so honored to be a part of right now, and I can't mention the school district's name because it's not, quote-unquote, official. There's press releases that will be coming out that the school will be releasing, and so I don't want to prematurely advertise anything before they make it official. Mm-hmm. But we're working with several school districts in our area. We're working on getting our book into schools. One school district is already using the book now for a summer program, with the intention to evaluate it and, you know, have me come in and speak to the kids. And then they're going to be looking at making it a part of the curriculum starting in the fall. And I'm very excited about it on multiple levels, as you probably could imagine, because it's going to allow us to go in and start working with kids in the middle school level all the way up to high school. And we'll be able to touch a lot more kids than our nonprofit can ever touch, because we'll have access to kids in schools, and we'll be able to touch more kids' lives, share with them the values and that we grew up in. I grew up in the 60s, and what I've learned all my life, and the workbook that's attached to the book will be a workbook that will help them to develop their own village like I had,
mm-hmm.
their own modern-day village like I did.
Awesome.
And
awesome.
So that's very exciting, and I am just thrilled to be able to have this opportunity. Like I said, it's not official, but it's in the introductory stages of it getting into schools right now. So I am very, very happy about that.
Okay. So the book is carving out a path
mm-hmm.
For you as well as for the individuals who will be using it along with the workbook.
Mm-hmm.
But the organization, it is a brick-and-mortar organization that people can actually come to?
Yes, we have our own website. It's OSIRISorganization.org. And it's, again, too, it's an organization that Gail and I founded back in 1997. And we started, as volunteers. And, Cynthia, OSIRIS Organization was never really a goal of ours. We really never really thought about starting a business. After volunteering for almost 2 years,
mm-hmm.
it was the young people who kept asking us to spend more time with them. And
don't you love it when you're in demand and you're just doing what you love?
yeah, we felt pretty fortunate. And that's a good. I appreciate the statement, and it was a great feeling to be able to have these young people. Constantly request us to be there on a regular basis, and especially when we were there as a couple. When I would go there, I would spend time with the young man in the classroom with them in the gym playing basketball. They got me back out playing basketball again. I had retired many years ago, but they, you know, these young guys can be so persistent, and so I gave in, started playing, you know, basketball and tennis, and I just started interacting with them. And then Gail and I started coming as a couple, cooking and being together. And some of the most powerful moments during that volunteer stage was us being together and then seeing us together as a couple, and especially as an African-American couple.
Mm-hmm.
That was very powerful. That was very powerful for the young men as well as the young girls. They needed to see that as well. And once we started OSIRIS, we knew that was the right thing for us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have our core programs, but the essence of it all is the simple values that I grew up with and that my wife grew up with. That's all that we're teaching. We don't have any PhDs in psychology. We don't have any MBAs in psychology or sociology. We don't have any degrees. None.
No, what you have is common sense first.
Common sense, yes, common sense.
Which, unfortunately, we cannot get degrees in, and we only wish that
exactly.
we could, but we cannot
exactly.
get degrees in common sense.
Common sense, nope, not at all. Exactly,
and,
that's exactly right.
And then you have the experiences of a loving, supportive family that, as you put it, had a certain level of values that you were required to continue in and outside of the house.
Exactly. They set the standard. They let mm-hmm. me know what was expected of me. They did, and they didn't waver. And
mm-hmm.
it was understood throughout the entire family, not just my grandfather or grandmother, but Aunt Ida, my Aunt Betty, my coaches. Everybody knew what was expected of me because my Aunt Ida made sure everybody knew. Yeah. She knows from middle school, I mean, from elementary up to middle school. She made sure that a family member was always at the open houses for school. I mean, all these things. She knew all my teachers. Yeah, she was a part of that structure that made sure that everybody knew what was mm-hmm. expected of me.
Yes.
And
yes.
and that's how it was. Those were the old school values, and you're right.
Mm-hmm. I remember because that's the same thing for me when I was growing up, and even walking to school, it wasn't just the teachers. It was like everyone on our way. I think my school, my elementary school, may have been almost 10 blocks away from home, and I walked with another friend. If any day came where people along the way did not see my friend and I walking past, my mother would get a call. And be like, and they would say, you know, we didn't see Cynthia. They, oh, no, I kept her home sick today. Thank you so much for checking. So you actually become accountable not just to your parents and not just to your teachers, but to your neighborhood,
exactly.
to your church. And you are required to be a representation of what you learn in your house. And that was big.
Exactly. And that was because we had villages back in those days.
Yes. Yes,
everybody,
and I was more afraid of my parents than the police or a gang, you know. I didn't have to join a gang. I was like, listen, my parents will kill me. I'd rather get killed by them to even do anything that you ask. There's no way you can even intimidate me because of where
I
come from. So
yeah, I agree.
So just the last thing, being a representative of your tribe or your village. How important was that when you had to leave your village and go to college? This is, you know, we're kind of backtracking between the Osiris organization and family, leaving your family, but understanding that you were a representation of where you came from, how did that influence your decisions and everything that you did after leaving home?
Wow, you know, when I was, you know, by being the oldest grandchild of my grandparents, I was the oldest grandchild, and I became the role model and the mentors for my aunt's kids. And when I was leaving that day, it was August, and it was a kind of hot August day, and I remember leaving to go to college. Cynthia, that was one of the most difficult, the most emotional, stressful time in my life. I was on a small part happy to be leaving to go to college and go to that next plateau of my life. But it was a time of profound sadness as well, because I was leaving my village. And it was a first time for me. And for a long time, I carried around so much guilt of leaving because I felt that I was abandoning my cousins, and they looked up to me so much. And I felt that here I am, had all this love showered on me by my aunts. At the same time, they were raising their kids, but yet still, I was one of their kids as well. They loved me just like they did their own. And I felt like, now here I am leaving. I mean, how dare me leave these kids when they need me? But yet still, I was happy that I had the opportunity to use sports and use basketball to be a stepping stone to get me in a school that I couldn't financially afford. And so I was torn. And I had no idea that I had held on to that guilt for so many years. But as I was writing a book, and I started writing about that time in my life and leaving, it was very profound for me. And I have got to a point now where I'm starting to forgive myself as a result of it. And it was very, very difficult for me. And writing a book set in motion a healing process for me. To learn to let it go. All of my aunt's kids turned out to be well. They're doing well. I'm proud of all of them. But yet still, I held on to that guilt for so long, and as a result of writing, I was able to let it go, to get it out in the open, let the tears flow, let the feelings come out, let the emotions come out, because anything buried, you can't deal with it. You got to let it out.
Yes.
And so that helped me a lot to make that transition to going into college. It set it in motion, but I didn't quite deal with the guilt in college. Going to college really kind of helped me to start thinking about it. But then I got busy in college and then got into the corporate world, and one thing led to another, and
mm-hmm.
and I didn't really deal with the guilt until mm-hmm. I started writing the book.
Well, now that's another conversation about leadership, dealing with letting things go and rebellion and all kinds of other things, but that's the show for another day as well.
Okay.
For all my listeners, please, if you have a moment, if you don't have a moment, please go on over to Amazon.com and get a copy of this wonderful book, Manhood from the Hood, Memoirs of Bill Roddy. I think you can also go onto the website. Is that correct?
Yes, manhoodfromthehood.com. That's the book website, manhoodfromthehood.com. Mm-hmm. And then for the nonprofit, it's just osirisorganization.org.
Wonderful.
If they want to get more information about the nonprofit.
Now, you're also on Facebook. I'm going to place the link into the event mm-hmm. tonight for any of you who would like to check it out. Please do go and see what this wonderful couple is doing in their community for young lives, creating young leaders, creating our leaders for tomorrow. It's an awesome, awesome task that they have volunteered to take on to become servants of our youth. And I think that's absolutely wonderful, absolutely fabulous. I want to thank you for being on the show tonight, Bill. And
oh,
I hope it's not the last
much.
Time you'll be on.
Well, thank you so much. It was an honor. I mean, any time I could can be honored to be on a show of this caliber, I am so appreciative of it. And I hope that we could stay in touch, and hopefully you'll be kind enough to have us back again sometime. So.
Absolutely. We still got to talk about Gail.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
So that is a definite. That's definitely going to happen. To our listeners, we do hope that you enjoyed the show tonight. I know that I certainly did. This whole month, we are celebrating Men of Leadership. So please do come back next week, where we're going to actually have men of the tribe on the show. That is Donald Bell Jr., Dwight Rousseau. I believe that Gregory Clark is going to join us at some point. We're going to be discussing leadership in the church, leadership in correlation with fatherhood, and a whole lot of other juicy, juicy nuggets of things. And you do not want to miss it. Please post your comments in the event. Give us a review. We would love for you to review us and let us know what you think about our shows, what you think about our guests. And, of course, we will see you next week. As you know, I'm Cynthia Williamston from Bridal Tribe and Tribal Wisdom. We are a company about love, beauty, wedding, and marriage fun. We love you. We are devoted to love, and we'll see you next week. Have a good night.